Fangoria presents Class of 80.
Kill her, Mommy. Kill her. She can't hide. No place to hide. Get her, Mommy. Get her. Kill 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 her.
Welcome to Class Of. I'm your host, Natasha Pacetta, the vanguard of the vault here at Fangoria. This year marks the 40th anniversary of Friday the 13th, and the Sultan of Splatter, Tom Savini, is here to share his memories. Tom recalls the real person who inspired young Jason's look, why Mrs. Voorhees has such hairy knuckles, his thoughts on the other movies in the franchise, and much more. But before we get to Tom, I want to tell you about Fangoria's latest movie. Porno is now available to stream on demand. When five teen employees at the local movie theater in a small Christian town discover a mysterious old film hidden in its basement, they unleash an alluring succubus who gives them a sex education written in blood. See the movie some moms are calling not family friendly at all. Porno is available on demand right now. And I want to tell you about Tom Savini's special makeup effects program. Have you ever wanted to create amazing monsters and characters and work in special makeup effects? This is what students are learning at Tom Savini's special makeup effects program. In this 16-month hands-on program, you'll learn every aspect of the industry and you come out with a degree. Graduates work on just about every big film and TV show out there, everything from the Avengers series, Stranger Things, Guardians of the Galaxy, Walking Dead, Westworld, The Mandalorian, The Conjuring, X-Men, It, Darkest Hour, Lost in Space, the list goes on and on. Graduates are also working in dental labs, theaters, the haunt industry, the toy industry, as well as medical prosthetics. For more information, go to dec.edu. Now, let's hear from the master himself, Mr. Tom Savini. You contributed to Volume 2, Issue 2. I know you have an article.
I think I'm in Issue 1, too.
Well, you're in Issue number 1, 1979, for sure.
Okay.
And countless more. You're on the cover of Issue number 304.
Oh, and you know that already. You didn't even look that up. You knew that.
I know it.
Oh, okay, great.
But yes, you and Fangoria have been...
History, yeah.
Great history together.
Even when they used to do the arcane messages, I was always in those... I would give up my sister for a date with Tom Savini, or can he hide under my bed? The arcane messages. That's what a lot of people refer to as me being in so many issues of Fango, the arcane messages.
It was kind of like their classifieds, but it was called arcane messages.
And it was just the fans saying
stuff. And they were
stuff.
Asking for you. And I think that's what Fangoria saw with issue number one. They saw so many people write in after that first interview with you about Dawn of the Dead that they were like, we want to see more from this guy. We need more about this Tom Savini guy. He's great. And it kind of,
Think about that name. Fangoria,
Excellent. Kerry O'Quinn. And Norm Jacobs, a genius. Uh-huh. Norm actually came up with that in the shower, he said. But you got Fangoria and Savini have such a history together. And Friday the 13th was actually first talked about in issue number 5. And then in issue number 6, you were interviewed for the first time about the movie. Young Jason had a whole spread of how you did it, how you did the mask. Talk about your inspiration for Young Jason and, how you decided to put that mask and the eyeball and everything together.
There was a guy in my neighborhood when I was a little kid. Bill Bailey was his name, and he was just a derelict, We didn't call them homeless back then. Maybe he had a home, but he was a drunk. But he had one ear lower than the other. His face was kind of misshapen. Even an eye was lower. And he reminded me of Quasimodo, the Charles Laughton Quasimodo makeup, So that's what I thought I would do to Jason. Because the script doesn't describe, what he looks like. So I had free rein. In fact, he had hair at one point. Jason had hair.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't think that was... I have pictures of Ari Lehman actually in the makeup with his own
hair.
Yeah. But he just wasn't quite scary enough, so I decided to make him, like a hydrocephalic mongoloid pinhead. And that's how the makeup evolved. I made him hairless, but with a slightly bulging cranium, so So that's how that evolved, you know, from Bill Bailey to...
Wow, Bill Bailey. Yeah. Did he ever know? Did you ever...
Oh, of course not.
No, yeah. that wouldn't be very nice.
He must have died years, way before Friday the 13th was even a concept, you know.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah. You have been in communication with Dick Smith around this time.
Yeah, uh-huh.
How was he influential in helping you create the
very
effects
influential.
For this movie?
Not as far as the effects go, but... before the movie I did before Friday the 13th was Dawn of the Dead,
right.
You know, a zombie classic. But I hate the way the blood looked.
Mm.
The blood looked great in the bottle. It looked great in person, but it photographed like melted crayons or red paint. It was totally unrealistic. And people thought we did that on purpose, that George wanted to minimize.
Like the Italian blood, the crazy.
That's true. That, mm-hmm. Their blood was pretty awful. English blood was good.
Yeah.
Kensington Gore, it's called.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can buy it. It's called Kensington Gore. So the blood was horrible, you know, and we didn't know that until the movie came out. And, you know, people attributed lots of things, thinking George did that on purpose to minimize the effect of such violence and such graphic gore. But that was not the intention at all. It was simply an accident.
An accident.
A mistake. You know, that was the lighting just turned it. Anyway, so before Friday the 13th, I got Dick Smith's blood formula.
Mm.
In fact, on the way to go do Friday the 13th, my assistant and I stopped at Dick Smith's house. And, you know, we were wowed by this legend, you know, and he was just so, he always, which is one of the reasons my school exists, one of the reasons my book is out there, to share secrets, because nobody shared secrets
right.
back then. So, but Dick shared his information.
So generous.
Yeah. So the blood, and the first time you see it is on Robbie Morgan,
yep.
it's very realistic, especially compared to Dawn of the Dead. So he was a big influence as far as blood. But aside from Friday the 13th, he was a huge influence. Everything we do as special makeup effects artists, he invented. He invented all of it. We enhance it. We take it a step further, you know, but it all began with Dick Smith.
And speaking about the blood and the throat slitting, there's quite a few throat slits in Friday the 13th.
You see Robbie Morgan's happen right in front of you.
Yes. It looks so real and it's so horrifying. What would you say is like where you are now? How fast can you do a throat slit?
Well, that was fast then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, Sean, we're on the set. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun's going to go down pretty soon. And they said, can we try to get this Robbie Morgan throat slit in? Tom, how long will it take you? I said, 30 minutes. Said, okay, go. So Robbie jumped on the back of my motorcycle, and we zipped to the makeup effects lab. And Tasso and I did it, and she was back in 30 minutes. And Sean was stunned and shocked. He said, you said 30 minutes, but I didn't believe you. You know, you're a man of your word. So, and then we did it, you know.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
And the lighting going down helped. It's a beautiful
It scene. Is. Yeah. It is beautiful.
I mean, someone's getting the throat cut, but it's beautiful.
Besides that, it's a beautiful atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other kills in Friday the 13th. Of course, the Kevin Bacon kill with the arrow through the bed, through the throat.
Uh-huh.
Talk us through how you did that.
It was a fake body, neck to below the chest. And it's something that I had. It's the same piece that I used in the movie Martin.
In the movie
Martin, a guy gets a stake in the neck, you know, and that's how I did it on Martin. So I brought that with me, okay? And it quite easily fit Kevin Bacon. You know, it's an average-sized guy. But what made the effect is the lead-up, of course. Kevin with the necklace on, the gold chain, the army green wife beater. And so we put that on the fake body. And the chain. So, I mean, here you're used to seeing Kevin, you know, lying in bed and smoking and, you know, and the blood drips on his head and you're seeing necklace, shirt, body. So when it came to the fake body from the side, you totally bought that was Kevin.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the arrow, the hole was already in the plaster behind the foam rubber.
Mm.
The hole was there. And behind the hole, I glued a an ice bag. That you would put on your head? So that was glued there, and the arrow was sealed inside the bag. And my assistant Tasso would pump blood to fill up the bag. So when I pushed the arrow, it would push the bag and force blood out of the hole, see? But what happened in the middle of the take was the tubing came off the blood pump that Tasa was pumping. And thinking quickly, he immediately grabbed it and blew in it.
Oh,
that's
my
what
gosh.
Caused the gurgling of the blood. So that was a happy accident that helped make the effect grislier, you know.
Wow.
Now, the Japanese version, you see it from different angles, front, side. It's not just that one angle.
Oh, really?
Showing. Yeah, yeah. The Japanese version shows it the front as well.
Wow.
So they must have shot it from the front.
Yeah.
They didn't use it, though, you know.
That's interesting. So it was Tasso, his name?
Tasso pumped the blood.
And was he under the bed
as well?
Yeah,
he was under the bed, and I was kind of sitting near the bed looking right at Kevin with my arm on the arrow. And I'm sure I pushed the arrow slightly to see where it was going to come.
Mm.
And when I was satisfied with that, I roll cameras, and did it, you know. But I don't remember who grabbed Kevin's...
Oh, his forehead.
Yeah, I don't know who did that.
Huh.
That couldn't have been Tasso because it takes two hands on the blood, especially when he grabbed it to blow. So somebody told me recently whose hand that was, but I don't remember.
It just goes to show, it takes a village.
It took three people to do that effect. Yeah, yeah.
And one of the best gore effects in horror history. It's just amazing. And the other one that completely blew me away in Friday the 13th is Mrs. Voorhees' decapitation. Can you kind of tell us what the setup was for that and how many times it took to get that?
Oh, no, I think only one. Yeah.
Wow.
Only one take, yeah. Because, you know, you warn people ahead of time, you should put multiple cameras on this because we're only going to get one take out of it. Because there's going to be blood everywhere and all that, you know.
Right. So.
But we made a cast of Betsy Palmer, of her torso, upper torso and head, because I knew the head had to come off. You know,
right.
So we had the head, and then, of course, when we put tubing in there, I saw a famous photograph. It was either from Japan or China or somewhere, a beheading, and the blood shoots out.
Oh.
Like 5 feet up in the air, the blood from the arteries keeps
shooting.
So
in real life,
until the body dies, yeah.
Wow.
So we purposely did that, you know. And the head was attached. The head was separate. It was already cut and distressed and sculpted to look like the innards of
the
spinal column and all that, you know, on both the torso and the head. But it was placed on the torso with toothpicks. I knew it would stay in place with toothpicks. Those toothpicks weren't going to get in the way of me swinging the
machete
to cut it off.
Go along with the
but
head.
But actually, it's a mistake, the effect, because here comes the machete, and the head goes off before the machete's even cutting through. Your mind finishes it.
Yeah.
Your mind makes it look like a beheading, but I've seen it a dozen times, and yeah, it doesn't even go all the way through. The head's leaving the body before the machete goes all the way through.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you're right. Your mind does fill in those gaps.
It does.
Never, I've seen the movie
a million
times.
So you didn't notice that.
And it never
Next
occurred
time
to
you
me.
Look at it, though, look.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow. And I love how Betsy's hands come
It's Tasso's hands.
Are they?
Yeah. You can tell because the knuckles are hairy.
See, I'm going to have to go back
and
look at that.
You can see Betsy Palmer has big, thick Greek hairy knuckles. Because Tasso actually wore the torso.
Okay, that was him.
On the back of his, he was bending over. His head was under the sweater. And so we shot, his head really bulged the sweater out. So Sean shot it above the bulge, and all you see is the sweater and Betsy's head, you know, going off. But it's Tasso's hands coming up.
Oh, man, look for the hairy knuckles,
guys,
next time you watch Friday the 13th. And you're responsible for the shock ending of the movie.
I had just seen Carrie. You know, if you remember in Carrie at the end, she's walking down the street, and the music is playing as if the credits are going to roll any second. And then that hand comes out of the grave and scares the hell out of you. So I said to Sean, why don't we do a shock ending like that? Well, with what? Well, Jason, let's have him, you know, we see him in flashbacks. Let's do a great shot of him coming up and grabbing, you know, Adrian out of the boat. He said, yeah, but he's dead. Yeah, but, you know, you make it a dream. Wait, Adrian wakes up and she just dreamt this thing, you know. And the only reason it exists is because I had seen Carrie, you know.
Mm.
And interesting in Carrie, he photographed her walking backwards and played it forward. And that's why she has that eerie kind of...
Oh, yeah.
You look in the back, there's a bus going backwards.
Because
it's
in
reverse, right? So that's why Jason pops up at the end. And, you know, and I had him jumping up clean, you know. And Sean said, let's mess him up with whatever's in the mud, the leaves and stuff, you know.
Whatever's
and that's why he looks that way. Sean suggested that, yeah.
Well, it's very effective.
Yeah.
I remember
I know. I was sitting, standing, about to go in to see the movie, and we heard the whole audience scream. And then, of course, the credits came up, you know. And then we go in there, and everybody forgot the screaming previous audience, and they all scream when they hear. Yeah.
Was that the first time you saw it in its entirety?
In the theater, yeah.
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 Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Were you... You know, did you look at it and be like, "Yeah, this is going to be a movie"?
No, you know, you're always judgmental the first time you look at something. Like even the Night of the Living Dead 90 that I did. Okay,
great.
The first time I watch it, it's like, "Oh, why did they do that? Or why isn't that?" But there was another scene. Why did they cut that? Oh my God, the editing. You know,
right?
That's the first reaction, and I always have that reaction first, and then of course I watch it and. You know, it's like my Creepshow episode that I directed, you know?
Oh, I love that.
I'm watching it and I'm thinking, well, why did they do that? Why did they? They're reversing stuff, you know? And I was, well, this is gone. Why isn't that? The first time I watched it. But then I watched it and think, ah, yes, they did a great job of presenting. Because in TV, it's the producer's medium, not the director's.
Right.
You know? So they put it out the way they
have to.
Wanted to.
Yeah.
And I agreed with everything they did. But my first reaction was judgmental, you know? It always is. You know?
Yeah. That I mean, any creative person is always going to be that way for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, looking back at Friday the 13th, would you change anything at all that you did in that movie?
Yeah. The beheading of Betsy, you know.
Yeah.
Even Kevin Bacon, there's the audience doesn't notice this, but, you know, his head is just resting on a fake neck, you know. I think it could have been blended better. But it worked, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point. You know, if it's a magic trick that worked and you fooled people into believing that what they're seeing is really happening, but just as an artist, you know, because and I tell this to my students, an artist is never done. Time is up.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Time is up.
There's a deadline. You could work on this thing forever if you wanted to as an artist, but time is up, you know, so.
The effects in that movie just have stood the test of time.
Yeah,
it's 40 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think that audiences are still finding this movie and still, like, the appeal is still there? I mean, we're so many movies into the franchise now. You know, why do you think this first movie has endured for so long?
Well, it's a classic franchise, you know, and it is a franchise. And you know how franchises work. I don't care what they're putting out. I'm going to see the next one.
Right.
You know, we've seen all the Star Wars movies, you know. But I stopped watching Friday the 13th after part five.
Mm.
Part five, you know, the ashtray was Jason. His spirit his spirit kept invading stuff, you know. And I can't believe, they sent me the script for part two.
That's right, yeah.
And I said, we got Jason running around. He's not alive. He's a kid that died in the first movie. And they said, no, we're going to change that. And they didn't. You know, I turned it down to do The Burning.
That's right.
Which is a Friday the 13th scenario.
Yeah.
But they said, no, we wrote this way before. It was Miramax.
Oh, okay.
Miramax's first movie, The Burning. And they said it was written way before Friday the 13th, okay.
Okay.
So they didn't offer me part three. And the series was kind of waning, you know. So they gave me part four, you know.
To kill Jason.
And that's why it's called the final chapter.
Right.
It was going to be the last one. But it made so much money. That's why we're going to see a Friday the 13th part 13, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was really disappointed in that last one, though, because it was supposed to be a retelling, you know.
Oh, the remake.
Yeah. I mean, they put his head in the tree trimmer and they didn't show that gorgeous makeup on him. Then the kids drag him 100 yards and throw him in the lake. And you know, as soon as they threw him in the lake...
He's just going to come back.
When's he coming back? When's he coming back? That's the whole reason they dumped him there.
Yeah.
They were trying to recapture the magic of...
The first.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And what did you think when, you know, part two, you know, they brought him back, but then the addition of the hockey mask, like this is a character you helped create. What did you think of that transition?
I can't recall back then, but it was a good idea.
It worked.
Because here's the thing. I had this conversation with Betsy Palmer about him being dead, and that's why he can't exist today. But she said, no. We never discovered his body. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that means this kid who almost drowned in the lake comes out of the lake. He doesn't know where he is. He's disoriented because he isn't normal.
Right.
He's a pinhead. He's a, you know, a hydrocephalic mongoloid, you know. So what's he doing? He's living off crayfish and,
yeah,
you know, for 35 years and nobody has seen this kid?
Yeah.
Okay, let's say that happened. Well, that means if he's wearing clothes, he stole them off a line somewhere, you know. So the hockey mask was simply on somebody's porch.
And he just took it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So totally logical, and I bought it. But it was unique. I mean, before that movie was, they did Last House on the Left,
right? Yeah,
which I'll never, ever watch again in my life.
I've never seen it. Don't, just because that's not my
No,
kinda,
spare yourself. Yeah. It's a tough one to watch.
Yeah, I don't like anything that's
because it's real. It's not some weird guy wearing a hockey mask, you know. Yeah, it's real. Yeah,
I
hate that stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting that it's the real stuff that scares you too.
Frankenstein, the Wolfman, they don't exist. You know.
Yeah, give me that all day
dismiss
long.
Dismiss that, but the real maniacs. That's what I'm scared of today. People.
I know.
People
yeah.
do weird things.
I'd rather be around movie monsters all day
long.
Well, this was so great, Tom. Thank
you
so much for
you're
taking the time
Hope
to.
You got some good stuff.
Oh, this was great for you, Tom Savini sharing his memories on the 40th anniversary of Friday the 13th. Incredible. Class of is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted, edited, and produced by Natasha Pacetta. Executive producers Dallas Sanye and Phil Nobile Jr. Associate producer Jessica Safa-Vamare. Music by James Malone. Art and design by Ashley Detmering. For Fangoria, Brendan Wynardi and Jason Koslerich. With special thanks to Tom Savini.